Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 36 of Youth Hacks. I'm Josh from youthhacks.com, and as always, I'm here with some of my very good friends from sarahflow.com. Sarah Flow.
Hello.
And joining us is our friend Don Rock. Don, welcome to the show.
Hey, hello.
It's kind of weird saying welcome to the show because I see you in the office every day.
Right.
So, that is strange.
So this is I can't, I wish I could do a flow chart of this or something. So basically, Sarah used to be at Fellowship Bible Church, where Don and I work. Sarah used to be the program director, and then I took her old job. Mm-hmm. And then she was the serve director, and then Don came into that position.
That's true. Basically, they just like men, so they fired me.
That's true.
I don't think that's true.
So. They liked your hair better. I got nothing. I'm sorry.
But I think Don and I are both significantly better at our jobs than Sarah was. So
That's true.
So I'm going to be moving out to Boulder soon to take your new job.
I hate you so much.
So cool. Well, you know, we've talked about preparing for mission trips some in the past, but we thought we'd address it again, and this time bring in another voice who had some cool experience. So Don, can you just kind of quickly talk about your background with youth ministry missions work?
Yeah, I had done youth ministry for about 13 years, and then got involved with an organization called Adventures in Missions. I came on staff to work with the program that they had called Ambassadors. It was basically directed towards high school students to go on one-month trips and to kind of spearhead that program and do the training for the leaders and for students.
So the bottom line is youth missions is a thing you know how to do pretty well, and you've trained a bunch of teams.
I have, and I've learned a lot through the process and still learning, so it's good stuff.
So whereas a lot of youth workers may do missions training once a year, at one point, so you were just doing team after team, right?
Yeah.
You got to see a lot come through. So I'm sure you got to see some trends emerge, so I kind of want to ask you some questions about that stuff.
Okay.
But I guess my first question is, so if you're training a team to go out on a short-term trip,
right,
like, what are your big-picture goals in doing that?
Well, big-picture goals for me with the team was always about having them get a different view of God, have their view of God expanded, and then to begin to live out the things that maybe they've been learning in the youth ministry all year long, but don't really have, for whatever reasons. I think sometimes it's just fear of our own culture, but getting out in a different culture that can kind of provide a mirror to us, and allowing them to experience and really live out the things that they've been learning and taught about kind of in church every day. And then the other thing is to really, in training, what I'm looking for is building community in the sense of, like, how can this team act like the church as described in Acts and early on in Scripture, so that, you know, how do we operate as a body 24/7?
So it seems to me like that would be significantly more difficult than the other stuff, like learning about culture, you know, learning team rules, learning how to, you know, do whatever task you're doing. That seems like it's really difficult, building that community thing.
Yeah, I mean, you have to come up with creative ways to engage people and have them begin to open up and be honest and transparent with one another. And sometimes, you know, like with youth ministry stuff, when I'm doing it with the youth group, like where I was the youth pastor and working, it was, you know, there's some of that already. But even within a group, you have students that really don't know each other. And so you kind of have to start there and building that community, because they're going to need that when they're out on the mission field.
So what specifically on this team build, like community building kind of stuff, mm-hmm. are there like techniques or exercises or things that you've done a lot in the past that you find work well?
There's a lot of good resources out there for team builders. I like to use team builders, especially ones that get teams up interacting with each other, just doing different crazy things, all stuff from we just last week we did with a team that's getting ready to go to Brazil. We had them just with the PVC pipe. They did this little exercise where they had to lower it with their fingers all the way to the floor, and it really caused them to kind of evaluate goal setting and communication and how they, you know, who's a leader, who's a follower, those kind of things, and begin to dialogue about where they fit in on the team. And it was interesting because they set a goal and said they were going to do it in 15 seconds and actually never were able to complete it. So, oh, wow.
That's awesome. Sorry, yeah, I said that's awesome.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so it's stuff like that, like different team builders that you can use and just to get people talking, you know. And that's the main goal of the team builders is, for me, is building communication and trust. So that, you know, when they're – because most of the time, if you go into team builder, people are like, oh, it's just a game. There's not really any consequences to it. But it's starting off with those things to build kind of the building blocks of when you're really faced with challenges that really matter when you're as a team out on the mission field. And those building blocks from those team builders can really contribute to how teams will respond.
I think team building exercises are a crucible that show you how terrible all the people in your team are. It really just brings out the absolute worst in you, and I that's what I always experience.
Trust falls.
Like going in, I'm always like, okay, I don't care if we get the goal done. I'm just gonna not be the biggest jerk in the circle at the end of this thing. It's so funny how heated things can get so quickly in those circles, especially high school students. Man, just everyone's yelling at each other about, you know, a minute and a half in.
That's true. My favorite is when you make the leader mute for the whole activity, and so they can't tell you what to do, and then it's just absolute chaos for the rest of the time.
Yeah. It's really true though, but the facilitator makes a huge difference in those team builders, because if they're not knowing that they're, I mean, it seems mean sometimes, but you're trying to create that tension to bring some of that stuff out. And sometimes facilitators are they're so, like, they want the team to love them so much, and they like people, and they want to see them succeed. And sometimes they make the team builders too easy. And so, like, there's a good tension with even teams not succeeding with goals, because that's a great thing to talk about.
There have been times I felt like I was being hazed by my facilitator.
And there might have been times that you were.
They had a bad week. So, Sarah, when you've done missions training in the past, what were your big goals?
A lot of what Don said, I definitely agree with. I mean, he pretty much covered it. I think that team unity, strengths and weaknesses of the team, finding out who's leader, who's followers, how people work together. And I think one of my main goals, too, is also to raise awareness of what's going on in the country that we're going to. I love to encourage the team members, students, and leaders to support the missionaries before we ever get, you know, into the country, just because it feels like they're more invested that way. You know, even if it's like $5 or $10 a month, like just something small, is, you know, if they give up a cup of coffee at Starbucks or something, and just commit to praying for the missionaries and for their families. And I feel like that also encourages them to continue supporting the missionaries even after, you know, they get back in the country. So just, social awareness stuff, just social events that are going on in country, that kind of thing. Just making sure that we remember that throughout training. And, I think Don pretty much covered it when he was saying.
So what about, how do you prep kids for cultural stuff?
That's a great question.
Obviously the cultural stuff that changes from country to country, but,
right,
you know, you don't want the kid to show up and be totally shocked by something that's very normal in the country they're going to and make a jerk of themselves.
That's true. We did something at our old church, Josh, that we worked at, and where we did an entire retreat, and we kind of created this in-country feel where they had to, they were sort of immersed in this culture they didn't understand and had to kind of figure it out along the way. And then obviously highlighting those learnings later on in training. And I think that actually opened their eyes to, just how careful they need to be and how frustrating and difficult sometimes, you know, adapting to a different culture can be and how careful, you know, and delicate of a situation it is. That's definitely one way.
Don, how have you dealt with, like, getting kids ready for cultural stuff they might not have experienced before?
Similar stuff, I think, like Sarah was saying, where you try to bring in different cultural elements that you can immerse them in. If you're near a city, a lot of, like, major cities have a lot of diverse cultures that you can have. You can do an in-country kind of one-day event where you can go and do some service with the kind of the people group that you're going to minister to and get that beforehand. And then they understand most of the time here in our country that you're learning and you can communicate that. You know, there's a lot of times people that'll speak both languages when you're here. I think that's a good way to do that. Another thing is just, you know, having fun with it here when you're talking about it. But I think, like Sarah was saying, stressing that it's really important that, and it shows respect if you can learn some of those things. What I found in country a lot of times is that many of our hosts and people that we work with are usually pretty forgiving at first when you make a cultural faux pas. But to make our best efforts not to do that. I did this one where we were in Swaziland, and one of the things where you show respect to elders is you grab a hold of your elbow when you're going to shake hands with them. And the first time I did it, I knew that, but for some reason I grabbed a hold of his elbow. So, you know, and then they laughed about it, and it was just one of those things.
Awesome.
I think that most of the time they're pretty gracious because they know you're not coming to, like, violate all their cultural norms.
Yeah, and usually if you're working with a missionary, typically something that's helped our teams is if the missionary is in town, you know, for a missions conference every year or something like that, they can come and meet with the team, have dinner, talk about things that, you know, are going on, and it just kind of helps the team, you know, prepare a little bit more as well. So,
what about safety? How do you deal with preparing kids to, you know, not do stupid stuff and to know how to behave and how to be safe while they're on the field?
I'll jump in. I think you go over certain safety, you know, precautions and really, a lot of the time it's going over that with students, but it's having good leaders too that are, you know, one of their responsibilities. They're like, hey, my responsibility is making sure these kids are safe. And then, you know, I mean, you do the best that you can with that.
Do you have any big rules that you always try to use when you're in another country?
Not being alone. I mean, you never let anybody go alone. And then my biggest thing is anytime I get in country is whoever our missionary host is or like the pastor that's hosting a team, you know, you sit down with them, have them sit down with your team like the first night and say, you know, tell my team what things and what places that they can't go without you. You know, like what's their boundaries? That they need to know that. And then you just say, hey, this is what our host has said is our boundaries. They know what's going to be safe and what isn't going to be safe in this country better than we do. So that's one of the things. But I really don't like for groups, you know, nobody to go alone, but even I don't like for groups of girls to go alone. I'd love for them to have a guy with them if they're going to be walking in a group.
Agreed. Yeah, that's a big one for us.
And I think the safety thing, like for a youth pastor or anybody, like one of the biggest things that is a hard thing to overcome is communicating safety with parents. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's really difficult. And, you know, it's, for me, it always comes down to being like just a big faith issue. You know, like yeah. you have to trust, because most of the things that happen in other countries can happen in this country.
Right. Yeah. It's true. It's just that usually parents are like, well, but I'm in this country and I can take care of my kids here. And you're like, well.
Yeah, there's an illusion of safety that comes with familiarity.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Something that helps us too, just with keeping groups together, is we do the good old countdown. You know,
yes.
Everyone's got a number and you do it 18 times a day and, you know, it works. But,
you know, it's funny you say that. Luckily, it was only for a very short period of time in a very safe place, but the only time I've been on a trip where a kid was left behind, it was left behind by like a block or so, but still, was when we just didn't do the countdown.
Yeah.
And we don't know why we didn't do it. We just didn't think to do it and started going.
Hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
It definitely has saved life.
Yeah. The countdown. The lifesaver.
Okay, so Dot, I'll ask this one to you. So if someone, say you're a youth worker and you're getting ready, you know, maybe you've had a couple of meetings with your team, but this is your first time taking a team out of the country. Like maybe you've been on trips, so this is your first time leading. What kind of things might you not know because it's your first time? Like, you know, there's some things that you just don't know until you do it. You know, so what surprises might they have in store for themselves?
I think for the first time, I don't know, the thing that keeps coming to my mind is just the spiritual realities of even spiritual warfare taking place within interpersonal relationships on your team seeing things that in another country that they just don't understand or never experienced before, and how you're going to have to help them process through that. And debrief those things, and how important it is to like to get your team to be a praying team before they go on a trip. You know, I would say early on when I was doing youth ministry and taking mission trips, like, hey, we pray, and we would pray before our meetings and our training meetings, and we'd pray for one another and everything, but. It was prayer of kind of God bless what we're doing, not prayer of like, God, we want you intimately involved in what we're doing, and we want to follow you, and we need you to go before us, and praying for the country, and like, just really like having the team, and I think that covers, you know, if it's a team that prays and it really. Is seeking after what God's going to lead them into and do. It covers a lot of things that would potentially be like mistakes or things that you'd overlook. But I think I missed the boat on that early on in ministry.
Sarah, when you went from just being someone who had been a participant in a trip to someone who led a trip and did training and everything, what would you say was something that you kind of surprised you was more challenging or something you didn't expect?
I think for me, maybe the biggest thing or the biggest learn for me is that, and maybe this is just my personality, but I guess you could categorize this in soul care. But I feel like I thought about and even prayed for also and tried to plan for everyone else, and I kind of forgot about myself in that. And I don't know that it was necessarily burnout that I reached, but it was just exhaustion, you know? And I found as I led more trips that, you know, if I spent some time kind of by myself in the morning before breakfast or spent some time journaling, you know, just a little bit of time, I was much more alive, I guess you would say, or like engaged with what was going on and not just like trying to make it through, you know. I felt centered, I guess that's a good way to put it. So I think that was definitely a big one for me. And also another thing I was going to say is having someone on the team that you can honestly process with that would not necessarily be detrimental to the rest of the team, because I feel like there's just moments when, you know, stuff just goes on and you need an outlet as well. And so having a not necessarily a student, but having an adult on the team that you, you know, just kind of have that understanding that you guys can communicate when necessary. Just, I think it's vital to the health of leadership, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's funny, both the things you guys mentioned, I can see someone being like, oh, yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, prayer, take care of yourself. Yeah, right. For sure. That's super important. But seriously, like, you got to get the paperwork, and it's you got to get
the passports and the money. And
do you wear the T-shirt on the plane?
Oh, gosh.
Or do
you don't wear the T-shirt on the plane.
Which, by the way, my vote is always just don't wear the matching T-shirts.
You definitely don't wear it in the airport. You're like a target.
Also, my mom is a flight attendant, and she has said that on international trips, it's well known that matching T-shirts equals rude people.
Oh, that's horrible. No.
It is horrible.
Delta.
We've witnessed that on flights.
Yes, we have.
You know, middle-aged people going down to, you know, Central America to do an awesome building project, and they're just mean to everybody in the way in. You know, they need an extra pillow, and their seat's not good, and they need someone to help
so
with their bag.
And they're so loud. Oh, they're so loud.
A lot of straw hats. A lot of straw hats.
Oh, wow.
So, okay, so I got a couple more things that I think are worth addressing. So while we're still kind of talking about the pre-planning and stuff, I guess this is, maybe this is a philosophical question, I don't know, but I think there's some practical applications. So when you do planning, like, roll your own, like, where you say, I'm going to plan my own trip with either a missionary that we know or we partner with. And I'm going to put it together. I'm going to do the agenda. I'm going to make all the plans. So where you're kind of putting your own together versus going with an organization that does this full time, that, you know, something like an Adventures and Missions. You know, obviously there's kind of trade offs in both directions. But Dom, like, do you have a preference there? Do you think that maybe one is superior to the other? Are there just trade offs?
There's just trade offs. I don't know if one is superior to the other. It really, like, when you go with an organization and if they have the same goals, like, that's what I would check out with any organization that you're going with. Like, what are their goals to accomplish? Because they'll say that they have, like, they'll ask you what your goals are and they'll want to check, but they have goals. They have specific things that they're trying to accomplish through their trips. And so if their goals line up with yours for your students and you think it's a great fit, then a lot of times it frees you up from all the logistics, and that's a great trade-off if you're the type of person that hates planning that kind of stuff. But if you love planning logistics and kind of doing that thing, and you have a great missionary that you can partner with, you'll have a little more freedom in your budget, I think, by planning it on your own, where you might be able to do some other things that you might not have going with an organization.
Do you think that the trips end up cheaper with one versus the other? It just depends.
It just depends. I mean, it depends. It also depends on your like your level of sacrifice that you're willing to make.
Gotcha.
I go on a trip because, you know, I've been on the mission trips where everybody wants to stay relatively comfortable. You know, they'll get it. It's a cheaper hotel, but it has air conditioning. You know, and then they go out and do their work or something like that. And then there's the trips where you're sleeping on the floor in a cement church, you know, for a week. And obviously there's a cost difference between those two. So, you know, and there's also, I think, like for me, I like the roughing it better. I think that's a better experience. You actually experience, you'll get to live with the people and experience more of their culture. As opposed to kind of the tourist mission trip approach.
So
I agree with that.
Sarah, I know you've experienced, well, I'll ask you the roll your own versus plug and play thing in a second, but I know we've experienced, well, you've done both ends because we've been on trips where we stayed in very nice hotels.
Right.
And then you've been, you know, in pretty, I would say, rustic conditions. So where do you fall in that?
I definitely fall in the rustic conditions. I feel like, when you go through you know, a little bit harder circumstances, things aren't as easy. It seems like it unites the team. I feel like when students are placed in hotel environments, they kind of get this mentality of, I don't know, it just feels strange to me.
Like
maybe
camp.
For your, yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, I am definitely a fan of pushing people to the limits on that kind of stuff.
All right, so backing up one level, like the planning your own trip versus going with an organization. Do you have feelings on that?
Well, unfortunately, I've never actually gone with an organization. I've only done plan my own, so I can't really necessarily speak too
gotcha.
Much in that. I will say that I have had friends, specifically I'm thinking about Joel right now, who, you know, planned his own for years and years and then went with Adventures and Missions and just rave reviews. So it's,
yeah, he loves it.
Yeah, and I think that especially if you are, you know, not working on a large ministry team and you just don't have the bandwidth to make it all happen, I think that going with an organization is the best way to go. I mean, if it's, like Don was saying, if it's a reputable organization, then it just seems like a much easier solution and,
yep.
you know, hopefully with the same kind of outcome. So,
yeah, I think
I mean,
mostly,
obviously, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say that obviously when you go with your own, you know, you're doing your own stuff, you're working with the missionaries, you kind of have, you can sort of treat it with your own kid gloves. But I think the biggest difference, at least just right now off the top of my head, is, you know, the team unity stuff. I think when you go with an organization and you're kind of, people are coming in from all over the country, you have a shorter window of time for training and team unity, and it definitely can be done. It's just kind of a different feel than,
yeah.
you know, if you've been with your same team for 6 months and that kind of stuff. But
I would say that, you know, probably most people doing youth ministry are not in a multiple staff situation. They're
right.
either volunteer part-time or they're the one full-time staff member. So, you know, then you probably need to be doing other stuff. So that does make
exactly.
sense.
Exactly. Yeah. And I've, you know, again, I've never worked, you know, as a one-man show, so I can't imagine having to plan a trip and lead a youth ministry at the same time. Like that.
Yeah,
just
yeah, same here.
Yeah, how did you bring that up? I mean, I worked with a two-man show, and going with the organization was definitely helpful with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because there's so much week-to-week stuff that you're involved with to
right.
to know that all the things are taken care of and what you're really focusing on is, like, preparing your team to go.
Absolutely.
It definitely makes it's a big benefit to kind of put in the column of going with an organization.
Agreed.
So I have one more thing that I think about a lot, and I think about it a lot because it's kind of unresolved for me. And I think that probably the most neglected part of doing like a short-term trip, and but something that I think is very important is what you do after the trip. And you know, you just, I guess because once the trip's done, everyone kind of scatters at the four winds. You know, there's just not a lot of people talking or thinking about that stuff. So, you know, Dom, have you done wrap up stuff with teams, or have you done, you know, what kind of follow up stuff have you done after trips with teams you've worked with in the past?
Well, usually we'll try to do, you know, some wrap up things, some debriefs, even kind of after in country. And, you know, like in when I was doing youth ministry, there was always the report stuff that you had to do back to the church, and you want to make that meaningful. And so you spend some time on that. But more than those kind of things, it's, and I can't say I've been real successful with it because people get back into their lives per se. And routines, and they forget a lot of things. And so, but what we've tried to create is some different experiences like what we did on the mission field and say, hey, we can do this in our own backyard. You know, we just did this here this next week. We can, you know, like one of the things that many times, the trips that we would go on, we would go and do prayer walks through neighborhoods. You know, just go through a neighborhood praying for people, and if you see people, you know, just talk with them and then, you know, possibly pray with them. And we do that overseas all the time, and it seems odd here in this country, but you can do it as well. And it's and just
trying to engage kids into some of those activities that they were doing overseas in their own backyard. And so I wish I could say I've had more success with that than I have. With working at AIM, some of the things that we did, we had teams that were coming, like individual students from all over the country that would come together. The interesting thing that happened with those teams is they, you know, built community over this month of being on the mission field together. And, you know, I've seen them, they connect over, you know, blogs before the trip, and then they keep those going after the trip. And it's been interesting to see those communities, which are so different than church groups that go, staying connected way better. So
that's interesting.
I don't know what the trick was, but they, you know, like they've gone to each other's weddings and stuff now, and it's just,
that's so cool.
So I don't know what the trick was with that, why it's so different. Maybe the length of the trip, you know, because it was a longer period of time, and some of the experiences that they shared, you know. Talking about that's also good too, I think, just that, you know, this experience that you've shared as a team, you'll try to explain it to parents and friends and stuff back home, but the people that only will really, really understand what you're talking about are the people that were on the trip with you. And so it's good to stay connected and kind of talk about those things and talk about what you're still processing through, you know, a month afterwards.
You know, it's a cliche, but I think that use it or lose it definitely applies here. Like,
yeah,
the transformative experiences that you have, if you don't do something with them, it just becomes like a memory, you know?
Yeah.
Sarah, have you ever seen or done any successful follow-up? Or if you could, I mean, if you were, you know, put in charge of a team right now and you could kind of make whatever you wanted of the follow-up time, what might you do?
Yeah. You know, I actually, it's strange. I just thought about this the other day, even though I'm not leading a trip this year. I was sort of going through my, I can't believe I'm not leading a trip this year, breakdown. And I was thinking about all of the very interesting, I guess we would call them recap nights, whatever you want to call them, that I've had through the years. And mm-hmm. I can't say that I personally, well, that's not true. I've been on one team, my first trip back from Togo, the first team. I think that that was a very memorable service for me, I guess. But as far as just like the overall feel of the team, I think that we wait about a week and a half until the students share in services, and I feel like they are sort of in this weird culture shock where they haven't really left the country they were in, but they don't really know how to adjust back to the country, to our country. And so it's sort of this strange, I don't have anything to say, I don't remember anything good that happened, I don't know why I went, you know, just like really motivating things. And
you know, sometimes too, I think that is, they're just given the microphone and they're asked to say,
right,
like to give significance to the thing. And sometimes you don't know what the significance is, but you know stories or narrative. And sometimes it's better to say, hey, tell me a thing that happened, like beginning, middle, end.
Well, and what I was
and they
say,
run into, I'm sorry, I interrupted.
Oh, no. I totally agree with that. I was just going to say, my thought was if I was going to change something as far as kind of recap, because what I love to do before we leave the country, even if we don't have time until we're all sitting at the airport waiting for our flight, is for the team to kind of have one last share time and go around and, you know, most meaningful or what you'll never forget about this experience kind of stuff. And instead of them just saying it, actually having spent, you know, 30, 45 minutes, however long, actually thinking it through, writing it down, and then giving it to you.
So you capture it in
the moment. So you have them captured in the moment, and then later, you know, if all they can do is read it from the stage, then, I mean, they're not going to forget those moments, you know? Like, once they read it again, I feel like it will actually spark the same kind of feelings again. So, I don't know. That was just kind of one of my thoughts.
Oh, that's good. That makes a lot of sense.
It's a good one. It reminded me of one that, like, I didn't come up with this. One of our leaders with our ambassador trips did this a number of years ago, I think. But they had the students write themselves letters about their experience. Yeah. And then, like, 2 months later, that leader mailed them out to them.
Yeah, you know? That's cool. Absolutely. That's a great idea. Or you could even capture it on video in country too, and then you've got the highlights.
You know, yeah, we talked about doing that in our last Ecuador trip, and it's tough. But if you can do it, like if you have the space and time and kind of one person who makes that their goal, I think it could be a really cool thing.
Agreed. And if you have several leaders going, you know, that could be one person's job that doesn't seem to have a ton of stuff going on.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Well, I think that's really helpful. Don, is there anything else that you might want to throw in that you didn't get a chance to get to that you think might be helpful for anybody?
Up my head. I was trying to think if there was anything.
Sarah?
I think that's it.
I feel like that was some good content.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I imagine that if I was someone taking a group on a trip this year, I would find a lot of gold to mine and that stuff. So that's awesome. So we're going to go ahead and move on to our picks of the week, which is, if you haven't heard the show before, that's when we share. that's our theme music. like a book or a resource or a website or something that we find interesting or useful in relation to youth ministry. And we kind of sprung this on Don. So Don may or may not have one, but I'm going to start with Sarah.
All right. Well, my pick of the week is an organization. Well, it's really a website. It's called livefashionable.com.
Live fashionably, you mean?
No, incorrect.
Okay. That's grammatically incorrect then.
Live Fashionable. Well, if you'll let me explain, you'll know why it's called that. It's actually an offshoot of my friends at Mocha Club, which I know has been my pick of the week at least once before. But they kind of started this new organization or offshoot of the mother company, and basically you purchase a fashionable scarf that creates sustainable business for women in Africa. So there are these women in Ethiopia that are making very trendy, very cool scarves actually, and we buy them, and the money goes back to help them rehabilitate into life and help them create income when they were typically exploited due to the effects of poverty. So it's a very, very cool website. Great scarves. There's tons of colors and styles. And I completely support this organization, and I love what they do. So
awesome. And I'm looking at the site right now. And first of all, it's a very nice-looking website.
It is very nice.
And there's some very nice-looking scarves here. And some
and
some men with bulging biceps wearing scarves, which is
I didn't explain the able thing. So fashionable, able. So it's just like it has these women's stories, and they say, I am able to look forward to my future. I'm able to support my son. And
oh, cool.
School. Yeah. So before you judge, Josh.
No, I'm not judging at all. I was just talking about the website, looking at it, but then I noticed these men.
Are you jealous of the muscles?
No, I'm not. Here's what I will say, though. Is one of my favorite things in the world is wearing a short sleeve T-shirt with a scarf. Where it's like, you know what?
As a man or a woman?
As a guy, girls can do whatever, you know, clothing. Right. But for a guy, clothing should be functional. It's like, yeah, you ever have like this a freezing neck and just really hot, hot forearms?
Happens to me all the time.
I know.
You know what, Josh?
Me too.
You
and that's.
Invent...
Go ahead.
I was gonna say you should invent a turtleneck, like a short sleeve turtleneck.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Oh man, I bet it exists. I bet if you Google it, it's there. Don't Google
it's
that.
Not.
But that's you know what I did. I just grew a neck beard.
Oh,
so that takes care of it.
That is it's disgusting.
It's not disgusting. It's a handsome neck beard. So Don, do you have a pick for us this week?
I think yesterday I was looking at it. It's called the NotForSaleCampaign.org is the website. And it's the whole focus is to end slavery and human trafficking. Really like the website, kind of just been diving into it, and in a lot of good information. And I got this great app from them as well for my phone called Free to Work. And so you can like scan the barcodes of certain products, and they'll give you all kinds of information about it, whether people are being used for slavery to make that product.
No way. That's awesome.
So
wow, that's cool.
I would encourage people to check into it.
Yeah, that's really cool. So it's the app is like one of those things where you use the camera to scan the barcode, and
yep.
it just does it give like a thumbs up or thumbs down or?
Yeah, it gives thumbs up, but it gives a bunch of information as well, like about the different products and companies.
Cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's awesome. I'm gonna go download that after for this.
Thanks for sharing. Good pick.
Cool. And so my pick this week is it's a website and an app. It's something that I started using. I did a trial when it first came out, and for whatever reason didn't stick with it. But recently I went back and kind of gave it another shot. The site is RDIO, so it's RDIO.com. And basically, you know, it's kind of
like a radio.
Yeah, like a radio with no A. No, it's like you know, Rhapsody, or there's a bunch of these sites that do like streaming. So you subscribe and you can, you know, listen to stream as much music as you want. And so they have a really nice iPhone app. They actually have a Roku app, so I can, you know, turn on my TV and play music through the speakers there. Because of this, I've deleted all the music from my iPhone and listened to this a bunch. And it's really cool. You know, you can build plays, a lot of cool stuff. But what's kind of neat about it, I think, is that, you know, I have to put together playlists every week for music for when students walk in, right? And it's like, I mean, the number one source of kids complaining about me is the music. And, you know,
I do hate your music.
And obviously, you're not going to, like, make everybody happy. But part of it is, like, you know, if you're trying to keep the music fresh all the time and you have to have songs that are like appropriate, you know, for the context you're in and, you know, actually,
relevant.
That kind of adds up. It gets kind of expensive.
Right.
So what I like about this is you can, you know, actually have a really cool Mac app too, where you can, like, it works just like iTunes. So you can just build playlists of pretty much any song you can think of and build them out. So you could do specific playlists for, you know, theme nights, or you can, you know, have things that tie into your, the series you're doing, or, you know, if a kid's like, so for instance, when kids say to me, hey, you should play this song or that song, I'm thinking like, okay, well, every time you say that, that's a buck. But you know, it takes the risk away. You can just throw the song in. And you know, if you only play it once, it's fine. So I think it's awesome for personal use, but it also is a really cool way to kind of keep a lot of fresh music cycling through your services and stuff. What's also neat about it is, so if you put it on your phone, like, so for instance, if you're playing music from your phone, you know, your phone's going to ring in the middle of the service, right? And mess it up. But if you put your phone on airplane mode, right, so the Wi-Fi and the 3G is off, like, you can't stream the music, right? Well, they let you sync songs to your phone, so it downloads it. You can actually play it through your app, so you can have your phone offline.
Whoa.
So
that's fancy.
It is fancy, and the logo's good looking, so that goes a long way.
Wow,
so,
that does.
Anyway,
that's
it's,
true. We do have crushes.
So if you want to do the web-only thing, it's $5 a month, so that's cool if you just want to play it on the computer you use to do, you know, music in your room or whatever, but it's $10 a month for the full thing. But you know, if you buy a record a month, that's about $10, so you know, it's not so bad. So anyway,
cool.
Well, we're gonna wrap it up here. I want to let you guys know, as always, if you want to get in touch with us, you can leave a comment at youthhacks.com. You can email us at podcast@youthhacks.com, or you can call us at, I'm pulling up the number right now, 530-968-8477, and leave us a voicemail. Also, something new, if you go to youthhacks.com/picks, or just go to the homepage and click picks, you can see I made a list of all of our picks. You can go through and look at all the different stuff we've picked.
That's true.
So yeah,
and Tony Jones likes my picks the best.
He does. He does like your picks the best. So, hey, Tony Jones update. I wish Joel was here to do this.
I know. This is
but
sad.
So if you haven't heard before, for some reason it appears that Tony Jones has blocked Joel on Twitter, so Joel cannot follow him on Twitter.
Hey, Joel.
Now, Tony Jones has now approved Joel as a friend on Facebook.
Yeah,
so,
but that's different. I mean, we all approve people on Facebook. Twitter
No, totally incorrect. Because Twitter, anybody can follow you. Unless you set it to private. But Facebook, it's like you're letting people into your inner circle.
No, wrong.
Wow. No. I'm absolutely the reverse. But But you've always been weird about Twitter, so you're probably just using it wrong.
That's because you.
So anyway, that's the Tony Jones update. Anyway, Don, thanks so much for joining us, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Don.
Oh, no problem.
It was awesome having your expertise on here. So.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, guys, and we will see you next week.
Bye.